This episode of AVXL was recorded on March 18th, 2017. So much fun, people. We got Mr. Rogers. We got 4K TVs with Amazon Alexa. We got hearables, which are basically a babblefish, doing language translation. We're going to talk calibration, Bill Paxton, Powers Booth, and so much more. All coming up on this episode of AVXL.
Testing 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home theater gear and content. No matter what your budget is, we love audio headphones. We might even someday love hearables. We'll talk about that in a minute. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Herron.
And welcome. If this is your first episode of AVXL, go to AVXL.com and find all of our older episodes. And hey, if you really like the show, please support us on Patreon.com/AVXL. We got a AVXL hangout coming up next week, the last week in May. And
cool.
We hope y'all will join us.
We are long overdue.
There will be no nudity. There will, however, be intense conversations about media.
Well, no.
And playing media.
No public exposure.
Well, yes. Please do not attend the hangout in the nude.
Webcams make it... never mind.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't go there. Don't go there. Oh, my goodness. Now that I've completely derailed...
I'm lost.
Lost and frightened, and quite frankly, I've probably lost a significant percentage of the people who just a few seconds ago decided to join us. But let us talk about something strange and wondrous that showed up on Amazon this week. 4K TVs, probably not great 4K TVs, but the thing that makes these stand out as Chris Welch over at The Verge's Circuit Breaker points out, Amazon's war with Roku enters its next phase. That phase is 4K TVs running Amazon software and Alexa.
Indubitably.
I try not to say the A-L-E-X-A word again for the remainder of the podcast.
So it not trigger said devices in the room.
Yeah. So, Roku...
$500 though for these TVs, value models. Mm-hmm. It looks like $449 for a 43-inch from Element and mm-hmm. a 65-inch for just under $900.
So think of these less as 4K TVs, but as 1080p TVs that happen to have 4K.
Totally. They have the resolution, but likely lack the supreme light output for HDR mm-hmm. and likely not covering the DCI color spec, the new right. expanded color palette, as much as some of the more premium TVs. But arguably, you're going to get a great experience. And I think for a lot of people, just having voice control with a product you may already have some experience with, and that could open up quite a bit in terms of just usability and Alexa, turn on my TV and turn to channel whatever, or stream my content from, of course, Amazon Video. Or
I got to say, the initial launch of Amazon Fire TV was profoundly mediocre because it just didn't do very much, and it was, of course, very Amazon-centric.
Totally.
It's been a couple of years, so it's probably time for me to break down and test it out again. But the voice remote with Alexa, you can control live TV playback, you can launch apps, you can search for TV shows, you can play music, you can switch inputs.
Pretty cool.
Control smart home devices and much more.
I set my mom up with Alexa controlling lights in the house, and mm-hmm. if I could also tie that into the TV just to have it turn on and off with a voice command, that would be something I would be interested in checking out.
And I got to say also that to Amazon's credit, given how I'm gonna call them weak, the initial Fire TV experience was, they're now up to 15,000 channels, apps, and Alexa skills, and universal search results, which this is really cool, across 140 channels and apps, including Netflix, Hulu, HBO Now, Showtime, Stars, and Prime Video. That's pretty cool.
I will say, the first streaming stick I got from Amazon, I think, was the Fire TV stick, the original, mm-hmm. and that was one of the few products I've had arrive where you opened the box, plugged it in, and it was already configured with my account information. It was a little, had a moment of like, wait, I didn't type anything in. That thing was sealed in the box and already linked to me. And I guess that's helpful. Mm-hmm. It made setup pretty simple. But
they know an interesting moment. They're in the house, Robert.
That's customer or something.
as Robert mentioned, $449.99 for the 43-inch version.
Yeah.
$550 for the 50-inch version.
Yeah,
$650 for the 55-inch version. Those all come out on June 14th, 2017. They're pre-orders now. And no notice of when the 65-inch version would be available. I got to say, these are inexpensive televisions.
Totally. No Dolby Vision support planned or HDR support. If you're doing the console gaming, you might want to look at a different TV maybe just for a little more picture punch.
Well, yeah, and also, I mean,
for
like
content watching, these are going to be fine.
You know, the TCL sets, they've got Dolby Vision, they've got HDR. There's if you want a true 4K experience, or more accurately, if you want to play ultra, you know, HD Blu-rays in all of their glory, if you want to, UHD Blu-rays in all their glory, if you want HDR, you know, if you're looking for the superior 4K visual experience, these are not the televisions to buy, but how, you know, these, you know, we'll try to get one in for testing, but these look like nice prices for some pretty slick voice control on your television.
And so, from providers who likely are going to be around for a while, too. So
I'm pretty sure Amazon's not going to go down anytime soon.
Not likely.
But, you know, if I chose Amazon as one of my favorite new television shows, it would be canceled by next year, so I won't pick them as a favorite. You know,
a lot of people to see. I'll talk about this later. There's a show they're bringing back for a fifth season that I don't know if I like that information or not, but we'll talk about that later.
I think they're on Netflix, that one.
You might be right.
Android Authority's got a nice write-up on YouTube TV, which has added AMC, BBC America. If you're not familiar with YouTube TV, right, it's YouTube's kind of over-the-top, you know, getting your cable television over the interwebs system. It's $35 a month. They're up to 46 channels, which now includes ABC, BBC America, Sundance TV, WE TV, IFC. Spanish speakers get Telemundo and Universal from NBC Universal. 46 channels includes Showtime and Fox Soccer Plus, which are an extra $11 and $15. But one of the things that's pretty cool about it is that you automatically get YouTube Red, which means you get the ad-free version of everything on YouTube. Which,
that's,
you know, given that's how my wife and I consume the Graham Norton show and various other things, by cherry picking the best segments and watching them on YouTube, the idea of doing that without having 9-minute commercials sounds really, really gorgeous. You get 6 accounts per household on YouTube TV, live TV streaming. There's a cloud DVR with no storage limits because they're basically just pointing to video they're already storing. Which is pretty slick.
That seems like a pretty good value.
Yeah.
If the service is consistent and providing you decent image quality for the screen sizes you're dealing with.
Yep.
And the chance for maybe some 4K live content down the road. Maybe. Maybe not.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, the CW, ESPN, CSN, Fox Sports, FS1, AMC, USA, FX, Freeform, Disney, the Entertainment Channel, ESPN2, FS2, BTN, SFC, USPN. There's like a metric ton of ESPN, Bravo, Oxygen, Sci-Fi, Disney XD, Sprout, CBS Sports Network. It goes on and on and on. Free trial for a month. If you are curious about it, you're going to need a you basically use it on your Android, your iPhones, iPads, Google Chromecast, and of course run it on your laptop or desktop. So something to consider, especially if you've been contemplating embracing the YouTube Red lifestyle. So,
liking it.
On a completely random note, Twitch is going to be streaming all the Mr. Rogers. 17 days. Just started a couple days ago, May 15th, running until June 2nd.
Aww. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, 886 episodes of the beloved kids show, writes Mariella Moon up at Engadget.
A couple months back, they did Bob Ross, all his episodes streamed back to back.
Little happy trees.
I'm telling you, man. And actually, he has a YouTube or a Netflix channel, in a sense. They have a lot of some of his content on there, too, if you're really jonesing for some Bob Ross.
I like the idea of that, you know, Twitch, which, you know, launched as a gaming
I have used
play
it for that
sharing
very thing
platform.
Watch me screw up in my favorite games.
Is General embracing Mayhem. Some of the most soothing television ever created. So, you know, once you've been fragged and shared your embarrassment with tens of thousands of people on Twitch, you can turn around and go, you know.
It's the live chat experience that you just can't get from, like, regular TV viewing. So, in addition to watching Bob Ross, you will then see humanity flowing on the side panel.
Yeah.
that's about the nicest thing I can, or the nicest way to put it.
Yeah.
Generally, though, with people like Bob Ross and Mr. Rogers, the crowds that tend to form in those chat streams are either pretty funny or yeah. pretty harmless. Generally,
Generally speaking,
I've jinxed it. It's going to go down in fire.
Yeah, I mean, along with Bob Ross's The Joy of Painting, they've done Carl Sagan's Cosmos.
Oh, that was the other one I watched, too. I've actually caught a few of those they've done through Twitch.
So go Twitch, and if you're feeling nostalgic, man, Mr. Rogers ran from 68 to 2001. I miss Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
I like gaming. If I've got a cool game running or something, or a cool scene in a game, to flip that on and let other people watch, but sometimes I just forget. And then I get really rude or something. It's like, hey, wait, this is live broadcasting. I should really keep that in mind. Anyway.
So many things we share with people unintentionally during live broadcasts. MP3 is, you know, the U.S. patents have effectively run out on MP3. Quotes on April 23rd, 2017, Technicolor's MP3 licensing program for certain MP3-related patents and software of Technicolor and Fraunhofer has been terminated. MPE changed everything. It did. MP3 changed MPE. MP3, you know, changed everything. You don't
changed
have
music listening, period.
Yeah, absolutely. And storage and playback. MP3 is, for all intents and purposes, dead to me now because I run everything in FLAC.
That's true. Yeah.
I will say once you get up to 256-bit encoding on MP3, it gets real difficult to tell the difference between that and a lossless recording unless you have particularly well-trained ears. But MP3 is going to start showing up in all the open-source platforms.
Good.
Where, you know, they might have forced you to download those codecs separately in the past. But I thought that was interesting because it really...
Well, I just remember
you don't have Napster without MP3.
Prior to this, it was WAV files that were literally gigantic and for a short sample of audio, and then it went to decent compression through the psychoacoustical properties of that encoding platform. And now that it's free and everyone's used it and it's been so easy to encode into it, it's one of those things that if this is legally not totally free yet, it should be soon. It's been there too long. It's tech everyone uses. It's the widest supported audio format, short of a WAV file. I think that exists in the natural
universe. I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. I want to try to play a WAV file on my phone, but I can certainly play an MP3 file.
I guarantee you, I'll play a WAV file.
When I get really bored, I'll test that. But I'm not bored enough as of yet. I had a funny conversation with a friend of mine. Who oddly enough works for a VC. And he's like, do you know this company? And the company, which shall remain nameless, makes an in-ear monitor that started as a Kickstarter project and, you know, took a while to ship the hardware. Ironically, Kickstarter is now starting a new kind of division or group within Kickstarter to help hardware kickstarts succeed, which is, I think, a good move on their part.
A different animal.
Not that, you know, writing video games isn't that difficult, but, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me over the last couple of years about Braggy's Dash wireless earbuds. Now, these are not the earbuds, the in-ear monitors, the hearables, which is something people are coming up with to name this new category of in-ear monitors or headphones that have a lot more stuff technologically going inside of them. You know, there was... you know, this was the Dash, the ones my friend asked me about, you know, were kind of like, you know, they took forever to ship, and by the time they shipped, they were too expensive for what they were, and I was like, you know,
it more than an earbud?
Well, it turns out that having truly wireless earbuds, and some rumors are to why the AirPods shipped so late is because it is actually technically very difficult to sync audio between two ears, or
a couple
or
of one-way. Yeah. I guess those are two-way devices. So.
Yeah, you know, it's much more sophisticated than it might sound, and to some degree, I think a lot of the problems have been solved. But you know, in 2015, this was pretty bleeding edge stuff, and in 2017, it's kind of becoming, you know, I'll say common, to be cruel. They raised like $3 million on their Kickstarter in 2014 to do wireless earbuds. And, you know, but they're also supposed to like do fitness tracking to your heart rate. You were supposed to be able to talk to them as a personal assistant.
A little accelerometers in the
all
earbuds.
All sorts of crazy stuff.
Are they using the mobile device itself?
That's well, the they were supposed, so much of it was supposed to be inside the earbuds themselves. They would work with your phone, right? But you know, the problem is they
and universal translation too.
That's the new one. Like one of the cruelest, I think, leads I've read in a long time.
Just language translation.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Braggy released the earbuds that didn't really do anything other than play music. And a lot of people were really excited about like some DSP type stuff on them. But Braggy's finally announced this is the deck from The Verge. Braggy, or the title, Braggy's new wireless earbuds are supposed to fix all the problems of the Dash while also adding real-time language translation. And then, of course, they're going to do custom fit options. So the $330, call them the Dash Pro. And, quote, while it's functionally the same product as its predecessor, it has been re-engineered to fix the original Dash's biggest problems. So better Bluetooth performance, better audio, because the audio, I thought, in the Braggies was mediocre.
Okay.
Better call quality, 5 hours of battery life.
Of course. And when it comes to translation, nobody beats Google right now.
No.
Their translation software on the API for it and the mobile and the performance of it, it exceeds what everyone else is doing by a long shot.
Yeah.
And you would think it wouldn't be so difficult to simply link the listening, being able to just hear the output translated in an earbud, and then have the phone handle the heavy lifting in terms of the you know, making sure that content's being streamed back and forth to the cloud service that decodes it and translates it and does all the other magic on the back end.
Yeah.
But just being able to isolate the voice so you only hear the translation, so it's always in your own language, and maybe the other person eventually would be able to always hear it in their own language,
mm-hmm.
so that you don't have the back and forth where normally with like Google Translate right now, you lay the phone between you and you can both talk to it and look at it and see the translated text. And in some cases, you can also listen to a translated audio, but you're both hearing both sides, and it could go along. It wouldn't take much to make this a whole much simpler and easier for stuff that kind of already exists in terms of the technologies and just putting the parts together.
I mean, that's what's interesting about this is the Dash Pro and the original Dash are supposed to be able to do the real-time language translation. That's what the Dash is saying. It's going to be in Braggy OS 3.0. So what happens is you speak into the microphone on the Dash or the Dash Pro, or have someone speak into the microphone, and then the app's going to translate the speech and send it to the earbuds. So the idea is like I could be in Japan and be, you know,
keep your phone in your front pocket, keep your earbuds in, and be able to understand anyone around you in multiple languages.
It's ambitious. This is a company, right? Because for the Dash Pro, they basically redesigned. They use the same chips because they're familiar with them and they know what they're capable of. But they apparently redesigned everything around the chips, including the PCB boards. Like the original Dash had, again, the audio was boomy, the mids and the highs were kind of, you know, munged up, to use highly technical terms. They weren't particularly clear. It had a habit, they connected to each other fine, but they had a habit of disconnecting from your phone if your phone was in your pocket. So, you know,
if you're trying to roll your own translation package for spoken words, that is a challenge in and of itself. So while that could fail miserably in many different aspects, getting the audio performance then of the headset is critical. You got to be able to brag about that. It has to sound decent, and it's got to be something you want to leave on. And this doesn't seem like. It just seems like somebody needs to put the part. The parts are all here. Everything's ready to roll. Who can just create the right blend of the hardware to either meet or exceed what Google's doing with their translation capabilities? Now, if Google could put together an API or a package that you could do effectively offline, where it required no cell connection, or data connection of any kind, where you had enough to maybe preload a few languages and something like that. That's really what I want, something that just doesn't require any kind of if you're somewhere where there is no data,
right,
it'll still work. So that's it's like I see the technologies. I love what Google's improvements with their translation. Getting that integrated into, we carry the mobile device that already drives it, and to be able to put that then into just the usability for real-time translation into what I'm listening to. You get your version that's in your language, and it opens up possibilities for everything. Travel, communication. I'm surprised nobody else has done it. Or had
it is
several
a,
products
it is,
that are, or the Google themselves.
One of the things that Braggy said is like we were probably too early because the technical problems were so what Braggy did well was like the whole using your head to kind of control, you know, your music.
Joy.
Yeah. That well, you know, I like the idea of like, you know, twitching twice and my music skipping forward. The application they're using, to do the translation, they partner with iTranslate, which is available on iOS. It's available on Android. You know, you're looking at like, you know, 4.5 stars on their current versions.
Not a bad thing.
I mean, you know, that's for like positive. 41 ratings on the current version. For the 123,000 ratings on all versions, it's around 3.5 stars. But language translation is something that gets better over time. So, you know, and iTranslate on Android is like 4 point something stars on, again, 129,474 reviews. 4.4 stars. So, the vast majority of them are 4 and 5 star reviews. So I think it's interesting. I hearables is a horrible name for something we're going to see more of over the next few years. I mean, I think eventually you will shrink the cell phone into the things you stick in your ears, and or you will, you know, have a jack in the back of your neck. You stuff your, you know, headphone, your phone
a la Matrix.
Thing into all of the Matrix. Hopefully not with quite that long a needle. But
as long as it touches, tickles the good spots.
I'm curious. For me, you know, like Rob said, I want superior audio quality, because if I have mediocre audio quality out of something that costs over $300, I'm really irritated. Or I'm a, you know, early Beats owner, which I'm not. But the
For language translation, for me right now, the easiest thing to do is to lay that phone between me and another person and just go back and forth with Google Translate in real time. Mm-hmm. And when you have that data connection rolling, it is almost magical how good that is right now. So that's the comparison I'm going to put toward anybody claiming to do any kind of serious sort of language translation. The ease of that versus with a data connection versus whatever else is going to be put forth. And
oh my goodness,
we'll see.
We'll see. Vizio.
Hey.
Moving hard and fast. HDR streaming now is enabled for E-Series television. Televisions of the 55-inch and larger sizes. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, this popped up 2 days ago. They apparently pushed the firmware update for the most value in their line. I guess there's a D-Series, but E-Series is where they start their 4K resolution screen sizes. Mm-hmm. Screens. And the 55-inch and a larger. We'll get this HDR 10 content via folks like Netflix, Vudu, and Fandango Now. And more important to me, really, is that they're adding per-device support for things like Samsung's ultra-high-def Blu-ray player, the Philips player, PS4, and the Xbox One S. So, if you have any of those devices, you should get some improved performance. You want to make sure your software is updated, and you want to probably go back through your video settings in those products and double-check that they're on auto or have at least redetected the new functionality that may be present through the connections. So
there you have it.
You should be getting some better pixels for the price of a software update.
Just saying. We've been waiting for a long time for Pioneer's BDR21-1 UBK UHD Blu-ray drive to start shipping in the U.S. It is available.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So we will be working to track one of those down.
Interested in building a new workstation this year, and that will be the drive I'll throw in there.
Can I talk to you about Ryzen processors? So many.
Probably not.
What?
I'm a gamer. I need my Intel.
Yeah.
I need my ASUS motherboard, my Intel, you my start looking Corsair at a, RAM, my Samsung
Corsair
SSDs.
RAM I'm down with. Samsung SSDs I'm down with.
Corsair power supplies.
I cut my rendering time by like half for video files.
For me, it's just straight gaming performance.
You know?
Yeah, nothing.
Only at 1080p, and it's really not that bad, and it's only on some games. Yep. And
that's a lot of graphics.
Memory latency, well, you know, this is we're not going to talk about it. We won't go down this hole. But if
I just
curious,
wanted a new computer. Well, I haven't had one in so long. I'm still rolling that i7-920.
Oh, my goodness.
That thing is still going.
Yes.
It's just shocking how long
well,
that's
that's because it's probably, yeah.
It's been well abused, too.
It has been well abused, but
it's
yeah.
It's been overclocked and failed and resurrected and... Anyway,
that's a tough computer. My.
But I am planning to put that the new Pioneer ultra high def Blu-ray player, because that drive in particular should definitely play back ultra high def discs if you're willing to go through the jumped hoops of finding the right software. Actually, that probably comes with player software.
You know, what's funny is I don't. It's you need a seventh generation Intel Core i7 or i5 processor.
That was the reason I'm going to Intel. Because I have to use their graphics chip for the secure pathway.
Which is so irritating. I couldn't run it on my fabulous Ryzen PC. How irritating is that? Man.
I hear you.
Fine. Ultra HD Blu-ray jerks.
Actually, I'm building some new Intel Nooks for a project. And I'm did a couple of i5s, the new 2017 ones. And I believe they have that support in there. They have the Iris 640 graphics. I need to check and see if they have that special protected pathway support, so I can anyway.
Well,
I'm not shoving that Pioneer drive in a Nook, though. I'll have to get an external case for it.
So. I'm just not ready to replace a 6700K with a new Intel processor that's going to do my work job slower than the Ryzen processor, so I can play back UHD. I also don't have a 4K television like
do
you
do. Do it appropriately. I gotta say, every time I hook up the 4K TV as an extra computer monitor, it is kind of nice to look at. It is so 65 inches of 4K PC screen.
It's pretty gorgeous.
It looks nice.
Oh man,
good stuff.
We got a great question from a bunch of people. I tweeted out from at Patrick Norton for if anybody had a question for at AVXL. You can also email ask@avxl.com. At Scott Phillips 88 tweets. Always looking for updates on projectors for the home theater. Seeing some Optoma 4K talk. Any good? Wait? And that is a great question.
Cedia is coming up.
Yeah.
That is the big trade show every year. I think this year it's in San Diego. And that is where the projector folks show up to show off their stuff. And the custom installers. Chances are at this show is where Optoma is going to at least introduce it, if not a little bit before.
Well, they did. So Optoma revealed or unveiled a $2,800 4K DLP projector, the UHD 60. That's using the new UHD chip from Texas Instruments. They did that at CES.
I saw that
this year.
It didn't even have the final case on it. It was a nice.
It was a very prototypey.
Looked good.
It's like, okay, Optoma's like, well, 3,000 lumens, HDR10, but not wide color gamut, and it'll be like 2,800, and they also talked about a UHD 65, which would be, more home theater than general consumer use or more theater pointed. If you go to optomausa.com/4k-projection-register-interest,
they would love to hear from you.
Yeah, hear more about Optoma's 4K projection. Optoma unveiled its 4K projection technology earlier this year with demonstrations at the Integrated Systems Europe and Infocom International Exhibitions. By registering here, we will keep you up to date with the latest information on our 4K product range as it becomes available. So, if you're really curious about it, you probably maybe should kind of go over there and sign up for it and see what happens. But they are not shipping any 4K projectors.
Cedia is coming up in San Diego, September 5th through the 9th. You're going to see a lot of announcements there related to all things home theater, specifically a lot of projector announcements too. So
it's something to think
about. Or things we had a chance to preview at CES. Yeah. We'll see in a more finalized or shipping version here.
So basically, at Scott's Phillips 88, you are going to have to wait because it doesn't exist yet.
Nope. Still, the top 4K projectors I'm seeing right now in the realm of affordability are Sony's. They're really, there's no one else doing it. So
yeah,
unless you got more bucks to spend, and then there's many other options.
So many options.
That is zero.
Oh my goodness. We got suddenly my phone is telling me that something is exploding somewhere. We've got a great question from Matt Ruari. He tweets, what is it that makes on-ear headphones sound different? Cheap ones have poor quality, $100 ones do not.
I threw a guess out there. And
well, you talked about magnets.
Magnet design, and specifically what it's made of. Is it neodymium, or is it
right. One
of the older designs? And there are some new magnet techs coming up that are fascinating as all get up, but that's something... At least I don't see that information. It's maybe you're given the formula for that magnet, but you're not which version of that formula specifically.
I have a shorter TLDR kind of answer.
I wait.
I'll give you the TLDR answer. The TLDR answer is everything.
Yeah.
You know, I first of all, I'll say I've heard $75 headphones that spank $300 headphones. I have heard, you know, I've heard a pair of $50,000 electrostatics that I would not listen to if someone gave them to me for free.
On the low end, I was looking at a relatively same company.
Yeah.
I got like the cheapest headphones they had, and they sounded okay.
Yeah.
But then I spent like $10 more, and they specifically mentioned an upgraded magnet design and driver. And it made a world of difference. And it wasn't much more money. So, yeah, it's everything, I think.
Yeah, I mean, literally, like, so you've got the cone for the driver. You know, how stiff is the cone? Is it, can it move freely, or is it a Mylar driver that's attached to the frame? Is the frame stiff, or is it sloppy? Is the motor, i.e. the magnet, you know, and the wiring, is it clean? You know, does it do a good job? How much extension does it have? The design of the cup or the enclosure for the headphone, you know, again, how inert is it? How it's when you start looking at people designing and engineering, we start talking to. It would be great to do I'd love to have a conversation with Skylar Gray from AudioQuest, who is unbelievably talented and, you know, is the guy behind AudioQuest Nighthawks and Night Owls, which are two of my favorite headphones ever. You know, or Dan Clark over at Mr. Speakers is doing fantastic things with planar magnetics. But when you start talking to these guys, I mean, they look at everything. And, you know, and when you change one thing on a headphone, it changes other things on a headphone. So when you start looking at headphone monitors, they may cover up a hole next to the driver. They add dampening to the headphones. They remove dampening from the headphones. They change the ear pads. They changing the size of the all. Everything impacts the sound, from the material of the cone to the material of the enclosure to the
literally
magnets,
how they sit on your head
coils,
and how you position them too.
Yeah.
So
and so so the short answer is everything. And hopefully. Hopefully we can get. I'd love to. I'll ask Skylar if he'll join us to talk one day, because it's fascinating when you start, you know, when people start talking about how subtle things are. You know, we had one of the I talked to one of the co-founders of Odyssey, the planar magnetic company that did they've just done a whole bunch of amazing stuff in the last year. And he talked about how many iterations they went through on the physical design before they could. Before they finalized the design of the iSign, their in-ears. And it's crazy. It's crazy to realize. It's complicated and it's messy. And, you know, a friend of ours, Brent Butterworth, who's a phenomenal reviewer and has probably reviewed more subwoofers than anybody alive right now, and is probably on the short list of people who have reviewed all the speakers. But he said, you know, he's talked to speaker designers and they're like, yeah, you know, if you use the right software, you can pick some drivers, you know, be smart, use the software, pick some drivers, you can design a great speaker. Nobody, there's no way to do that. Headphones are so complicated by comparison. So,
However, I did come across an article, though, about a new type of permanent magnet that's an alternative to the rare earth style that we're using for these. And apparently the rare earth elements seem to be concentrated in certain countries and not spread evenly around the world. So it makes it more difficult to possibly obtain these materials. Anyway, if a more powerful magnet at a lower cost would help the speaker industry, take a look at something called the iron nitride permanent magnets that are just coming into play in terms of being able to pretty much They're claiming double the effective magnetic power of the current style neodymium magnets. Mm-hmm. So, and using literally iron oxides and nitrogens brought together. They're very simple components. And this could, I could see in a couple of years, people maybe doing some very interesting new speaker designs in terms of either shrinking it or just going for more efficiency or power from a similar design. I'd be curious to see what, if anything, comes of that, if a new magnet would be of use to the folks who do speaker design. And now suddenly I want to go do a lot more speaker-related magnet research.
Well, we should probably also talk to some speaker and headphone designers.
It was an interesting article, and I'll link that. It was a pretty, just a quick technical blurb on some educational website I found. So.
Oh, my goodness. We got a bunch more questions. We're going to talk about our favorite devices to connect to our TVs and TV operating systems. We'll talk about those a little bit more next week and why nobody makes large screen TVs without smart TV features. If you got a question for us, do us a favor, tweet at at AVXL, email ask at AVXL, or tweet at Robert Heron or at Patrick Norton.
Heck yeah.
Powers Booth passed last week. If that name seems kind of familiar, he was Cy Tolliver in Deadwood. He was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He played Gideon Malik in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He was in Sin City. Red Dawn, which goes back to my teenage years. He played Curly Bill Brocious in one of my favorite movies of all time, Tombstone. He played big, scary people better than almost anybody else out there. This guy was hardcore. He quit playing football in high school in Texas to act. One of my favorite quotes, quote, "They all couldn't conceive of why I'd want to stop to do the importance of being earnest."
That's nice.
We will miss his work. Bill Paxton also passed earlier this year. I think the first time I saw him was either in The Lords of Discipline or Streets of Fire. Streets of Fire is one of my favorite terrible movies of all time. Visually stunning.
Probably Terminator for me, sitting in the old theater.
Weird Science, Aliens.
The
also terrible but fun to watch Navy SEALs. He also was in Tombstone, Titanic. He directed The Greatest Game Ever Played. Probably my wife's favorite Bill Paxton role, Bill Henriksen in Big Love. I played John Garrett in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Personally, my favorite Bill Paxton role, and, you know, I loved him in Streets of Fire and The Terminator and Weird Science and Aliens and Big Love and Tombstone and everything else. But Sergeant Farrell, Master Sergeant Farrell in Edge of Tomorrow, Tom Cruise, who looks at him and says, "Oh, you're American." And Bill Paxton rips back without losing a beat, "No, sir, I'm from Kentucky." It's all awesome.
True Lies. I'll throw that out there.
True Lies.
The
I will miss
car,
his work.
Used car salesman ever.
Oh, my goodness. So those are some movies and series to check out if you haven't seen them. Mary Tyler Moore, Sir John Hurt, Chuck Berry, who's not an actor, but, you know, kind of founded rock and roll. Don Rickles, Jonathan Demme, unbelievably talented filmmaker and director. We'll talk about some of our favorite picks from these folks
saw
later.
Don Rickles do stand up in Vegas like about last year. It was like one of the last shows he did. So
there's a great documentary about Don Rickles.
That was an interesting time capsule of entertainment, and it was
a lot of love in that man's hate, or a lot of hate in that man's love.
I saw it. It's just that's an era gone, man. Never to come back.
He hated and insulted everyone and all things equally.
You know, back in the day, he was on it.
You're calling the LG C6 OLED the best 3D TV ever made.
Yeah, because there aren't any left, you know. That kind of has been shuffled out of the TV production, but I had a chance this week to calibrate one of the that's the curved model. I want to say the B6, the flat one, doesn't have 3D, and it has a different chipset in it. But that's C6 from 2016. Fantastic. They tune up beautifully. If you are a fan of 3D content, there is no better set. That was a passive 4K screen with superb brightness. I will say, though, and this is something I never noticed before, but it has the worst power plug. It is like the longest straight connector that just goes right into the wall. It doesn't have like a 90-degree jack on it or a plug like 90% of the other TVs I look at. This thing was actually interfering with a wall mount, and we literally had to go buy a short little flat plug designed power strip just to make this all look right. And it was anyway. Also tuned up 2015, the JS90 8500 Samsung LCD. That was their top of the line flat panel from 2015. I will say, just doing two different technologies this week, both produced very good white balance after setup. The errors were well below just noticeable differences. And I will say that color accuracy post-calibration on both of these, OLED and LCD respectively, were just fantastic looking with a little tune-up. Quick tip, if you are doing these white balance adjustments, generally speaking, you always try to lower the controls. You never try to raise them. Lower the things that are peaking down to the level of the other stuff. Generally, if you raise the red, blue, green levels, you have a chance of introducing clipping or other artifacts. So if you have to go a direction, choose lower generally. Anyway, that's all I want to mention for that. But just fine-tuning those sets. It's always nice to look at content that you're familiar with afterwards. Mm-hmm. Funny thing, and I'm sure I'm not the only one that discovered this, but I was at a client's house, and he had the new John Wick 4K Ultra High Def Blu-ray.
Ooh.
If you just open the packaging and look at the disc, and you take the disc out that's in the right side that's facing you and put it in the player, you may not realize that's the Blu-ray version and not the Ultra High Def version. It's the same in my packaging, too, but like 99% of the other discs I get, the 4K is the one that's visible right up front, usually. And I happened to note it at the client's house. He's going like, you know, I watched this movie. It didn't look so great. I'm like, I'm not sure what's going on. And so I take the disc out of the player, and I'm like, this is just the regular Blu-ray. This isn't the ultra-high-def one.
I did the exact same thing with My Neighbor Totoro when the Blu-ray
came
out.
But then I looked at the case of mine that I have a separate copy. Same thing. So it's just check your packaging and make sure you're putting the UHD disc in if you have all of that.
I grabbed My Neighbor Totoro. It's in Blu-ray. I'm really excited. I throw it in the machine. It looks like crap.
DVD.
Like, what the? Yeah, it was the DVD.
It happens to everyone, man.
You know, which is why you should just throw away the DVD in the box whenever you get a new Blu-ray.
I guess they need a clear logo. That's all I'm asking for.
Well, you know, you would think a big blue label is obvious because it's generally blueprint on the Blu-ray, but sometimes they make it almost impossible to tell. Then you flip it over and you're looking, okay, this is the DVD and this is the weird high-density Blu-ray. It's the simple things that cause the most trouble in home theater.
Looking good.
Oh, my goodness. Remember, kids, always verify that your left and right channels are your left and right channels. Or one of my personal favorite things, somebody put the surround sound channels in the front. How that happened, I don't know. But, boy, were they excited when we flipped the cables and suddenly the dialogue was coming from in front of their head and not behind them. It happens.
It does.
It does.
It does.
With that, ladies and gentlemen, we have to scoot, but we will have another exciting episode for you next week. And I mentioned it before, I'll say it again, if you enjoy the show and you want to see it keep coming, do us a favor. Join up with the crew at patreon.com/AVXL to help support Robert and I to make the time to make this possible. And remember, we will be having a hangout next week. So if you're on Patreon, keep an eye out for the email that announces the time for that hangout and come join us.
I would love that.
We would love that. At Robert Herron, at Patrick Norton, at AVXL, ask@AVXL.com. And the website is AVXL.com, which hopefully y'all can find. And if you enjoy the show, do us a favor, tell your friends about it. You can give us a review in the iTunes store or wherever, whatever podcatcher.
Go
you
check
use.
Our Google Play to make sure that's all updating.
It was running. Good. It was smiling. And who knows where we'll show up next.
We've been getting out the Patreon version of this audio feed too to everyone like day after, usually. And I've far less work this week, so we should be getting the public version out. Within a day or two later.
There you have it. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next week, or we'll talk to you next week on AVXL.